Welcome to the My Family Coach podcast. I'm Claire, and each week you'll find me interviewing a guest expert to find out more about the tricky world of child behaviour, all in handy 15-minute-ish bite-sized chunks. At the end of each episode, we'll send you away with three practical tips. It's perfect for parents, carers, and professionals working with children. And if this episode leaves you wanting more, you can watch, listen, and read our wide range of free resources on the My Family Coach website. I'm joined today by Kelly Evans. Kelly is the family advisor for the West Berkshire Autism Team. She supports the families across West Berkshire by offering one-to-one support. She also facilitates training, runs workshops in schools, and in addition to that is a trainer for the PDA Society, running training for both families and schools. And today Kelly and I are talking about what happens if my child with autism is also very anxious. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Kelly, how are you?
Hi, yeah, good, thank you.
Very good to see you this morning. Just for context for those listening, we are recording during the heat wave, and I'd say there's a bit of perspiration quite early on. So do apologise if either of us get flustered or forget our words, but it is pretty hot today. Yes, and I think you have it worse, Kelly, don't you?
Yeah, it is pretty hot here. It was hotter than it was yesterday morning. So, yeah, lots of water and staying inside. I'm trying to do the trick of closing my curtains and shutting the windows. But
yeah, and suffocating.
Well, I know. I'm not really sure.
That's the advice, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm having a go.
And I suppose we can link this really to the topic that we're talking about, which is autism and anxiety. And I know in the information that you've given over to me in the chat that we've had, we've talked about environment actually already. And I'm sure, you know, those that might have, you know, neurodiversity might really be struggling in this heat as well. But let's start off as we usually do with a book recommendation, Kelly, on the topic.
Yeah, so a book that have loved reading and sort of have read it a couple of times is Avoiding Anxiety in Autistic Children, and that's a guide for autistic well-being, and it's by Dr. Luke Bearden. And I know anyone who's ever sort of seen him speak or heard him speak, he's fantastic. And the book sort of talks about how sort of what is anxiety and understanding it, and what's common for autistic individuals and their anxiety and the environment, so such as school, sensory issues, you know, any social challenges that they might have, and also just sort of tips and things about working through that anxiety and how we can support our autistic individuals to get the best outcomes, and how those individuals can help to support as well by understanding our neurodiverse population.
Yeah, that understanding, I think it's come up on a few episodes previously. It's having an understanding, empathy, support, and practically helping as well is so important. I've not heard of that book. I always say this to every guest. I'm like, well, I must read that one. I actually don't think I'll get through all of the books I say I must read. No. But I think it's a really interesting topic for me. Personally, I work one day a week with those on the autistic spectrum in a high school, and I hadn't worked in an autistic provision for a while, maybe for about 10 years, and it reminded me again going back in last year the anxiety levels and how that manifests and how high it is. So I'm really interested in this topic professionally as well as personally with some of the support I do for parents, carers. Let's give a bit of context around you, though, Kelly. Talk a bit about your experience with this topic.
Yeah, so I suppose personally, I have two daughters. My eldest daughter has a diagnosis of autism, along with ADHD, and specifically a PDA profile of autism as well. And her anxiety levels have always been quite high. I suppose even before she had that diagnosis, when she was 8, you know, she was a worrier. She would get anxious, get stressed about different things, and so we were always looking at ways to support her and things that we could do, even those things like bits of yoga and mindfulness and that type of thing. And I also trained as a relaxed kids coach, and so I brought quite a lot of that into supporting her, and became more and more interested. I've been a teacher for over sort of 20 years, and I'm now working in a local autism team, and it is an area that is just, it's so important, you know. Just because someone is autistic doesn't mean that they are going to be anxious. However, often because of environment, because of other factors, we do find that these individuals are those that are more anxious. And so a lot of work that I do one-to-one or in small groups and with my daughter is to do with coping with that anxiety and how we can support it in the best way.
Yeah, it's such important work, and I know maybe you found this professionally or maybe through family, is that that obviously diagnosis of autism is growing and our awareness and understanding of it is growing, which probably accounts for the more diagnosis, you know, rather than more people being on the autistic spectrum. But it's really concerning maybe for some parents, carers listening, about how some of those anxiety traits might come out. So I wondered if you could talk more about some of those anxiety traits in those on the autistic spectrum and how it might show.
Yeah, and we see a range. Obviously, it's all individual. You know, one person is never the same as another. However, we do see in a number of ways, from physical symptoms, and you know, stomach ache, headaches, but we also see it in avoidance of certain situations. So there might be sensory overload in certain environments that then cause those individuals to not want to join in social events, and that can also be with school as well. So in my work more recently, I've been working with some of these individuals who are extremely anxious about entering into that school environment. And it's about that understanding, and I think one of the things that we really focus on as a team is what's underneath that. We see that top of the iceberg, we see those behaviors, we might see some self-harm, we might see sort of distress behaviors, or you know, a whole range of things, difficulty sleeping, physical symptoms, and so on. But what's really important is what's going on underneath the surface, and it's about watching. It's about learning. Often we assume that we know, and we say things, oh, of course, it must be that you're anxious about so and so. But we really need to ask. We really need to hear from our neurodivergent population and individuals and listen to what they're saying, rather than assume and rather than think that we know the answers. Really listen to them and support exactly how they need the support.
So almost like behaviors are communication, and we're looking beneath that communication or a bit harder into that communication to find out what's driving it. But it's interesting, that flip actually that you've just said, because you know, you immediately go into that spiel, behaviors are communication, it's our job to find out whether we're parents, carers, but actually it's our job to ask is really what you're saying, to find out if that person has the capabilities to communicate in a way where they can express feelings and what's going on beneath it. It's really, really interesting, and I think it's a nuance, but it's key, isn't it?
It is. It's being inquisitive, not assuming, really listening. And also a person is able to be their true autistic self as well. Mm. So there are many times when, you know, masking, I suppose, particularly can be particularly with girls who are wanting to fit in with the social situation, the activities, and also, you know, males as well. But, you know, we do see a lot of girls who really want to fit in with their group, and then they mask because there isn't that awareness, there isn't that understanding. And so they stop being their true autistic self. And actually that increases their anxiety underneath the surface. So actually, even if a young person or individual seemingly is fitting in, is seemingly okay, just watch, be aware, because actually that can be sort of a red flag as well. Because are they masking? Are they trying to fit in and not be their true autistic self?
Tell me more about masking around, I guess, parents, carers listening. So that's the idea that someone is not being their true self, hiding underneath a mask, their true self to fit in with societal norms. Is that a fair?
Yeah. And you know, there's this whole idea of resilience. And yes, we all need that bit of resilience, and we need to be able to have it in us to keep going and so on. But also we don't want that to become them not being their true selves. So it is about acceptance. It's about, you know, not dismissing rather those emotional responses that they're having, and ensuring that where possible and in the correct communication style that they're talking and being open, and not masking how they're feeling.
Which can be, I'm sure, quite a troubling place to be in, because you were mentioning, which I found really interesting, the idea that then masking things more can make us more anxious. Tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, well, keeping in things, whether that's forcing ourselves into an environment which we're finding extremely overstimulating, and actually that takes its toll. So somebody who is masking all day, and I talk to a number of parents and schools, and schools will say, oh, you know, they're fine, they're absolutely fine, there's no problem, they're coping really well. And then at 3:15 they get the explosion, they get to the top of that or that Coke bottle effect, where they've masked all day, and that takes its toll. And we do work with some young people and families where actually that individual is no longer able to go into school, or in some cases go out of their bedroom, out of their home, because they have masked for so long that they've gone into what's called sort of an autistic burnout type breakdown, where and that's extreme. That's obviously not going to happen to everybody, but you know, that just shows how these things, that masking takes its toll, and can really have those devastating effects later on.
And that drip effect, where it is really impacting and it's really taking its toll, but it might not be as obvious. That can be really difficult to spot, can't it?
It can. It absolutely can. And there, that is why being inquisitive, being proactive rather than reactive, and making sure that they have those skills. So it's so important that we teach our young people as young as we possibly can these skills to cope with increased anxiety at times, whenever they need it throughout life, and that can be through whichever way is appropriate to them, whether that is talking, whether that's mindfulness, whether it's focusing on preferred topics and specific things that they enjoy doing, whether it's outdoors, whether it's that sort of sensory feedback that they need to get from certain activities, whatever it is they need to do. It's really important that one, we are able to co-regulate with them to start with when they're sort of on that journey, but then empowering them to be able to do that as they go through life, really.
It's really interesting that you've talked all the way through this short interview about individuals and having individual tactics, how you've just described. And I'm thinking of an extended family member who was really struggling with the idea that you've just talked about with masking. And so a book was bought for them, and it was about girls. I can't remember the name of it, but it's quite a teen kind of friendly book around autism and girls with autism. And that was their way, and that was the best way of getting that information across, where they could read it for themselves and process it.
And to do that, they have to have that trust. They have to have the trust in themselves. They have to have the trust in those around them that are going to understand, that are going to support, who aren't going to encourage them to fit in. Yes, as I said, we need to build a little bit of resilience for everybody. That's just, however, we don't want to build it to that extent where they're just masking and to fit in. But yeah, absolutely. It's all very individual. It's knowing that person and knowing what will help them, or trying different things as well to start with. But as young as we can, modelling that as well as parents. So just that emotional language when they're young, you know, about how we're feeling as parents. You know, oh, I'm feeling, you know, a bit overwhelmed today, or a bit upset and a bit annoyed. I'm going to sit down, have a cup of tea, and I will feel a bit better. better. You know, that's really basic. But actually, when a child is young and they're hearing that, they're hearing what their carer, their parent is feeling, why it's made them happen. You may say you've got to have a headache or whatever, so that physical symptom, and also what that parent's going to do about it, and be proactive with that.
That lovely role modelling. As well as role modelling, I was thinking about language, and I'm only thinking about this because I was on Twitter the other day, and it does relate to our topic. The anxiety from an autistic individual becomes so high that actually it might end up where they're not able to attend school because it's proving to be really challenging. I'm just wondering around our language around labelling that behaviour, because there's quite a lot out there. I mean, we're trying to move away from the idea of school refusal. It isn't a refusal, it's a I can't actually do it. I just wondered, because I know language is really important, I'm a real stickler for language. Some ideas for parents, carers, professionals listening of how we can phrase that and different things around anxiety and autism.
Yeah, and I'm very careful. I have had to send emails, have conversations with my daughter, because she was unable to attend. And I suppose, you know, a few years ago, I may have said it's refusing to come in. However, with that shift of language and that understanding, I never use that term anymore. And I was watching something recently when someone was talking about that school refusal, and I always put in that my daughter is unable to attend today due to extremely high anxiety, and being clear, it isn't a refusal. It's not something that they've gone, oh, I don't fancy that today. They really are unable to attend or to go to that activity or do that particular thing, and it's really important that those around them, school, family, and whoever are using those terms, that get that message across. Absolutely.
I mean, I do. I don't really like huge social things. Everyone knows that. Knows me. I'm a real like grump, and I just quite an introvert secretly. And I think if I had people saying, "Oh, you know, she's refusing to," livid, I'd be, well, not livid is probably unfair, I'd probably be really sad, and I'd be quite upset that people were speaking about me in that way. But actually, and putting in language where it's that individual's fault that they're having that difficult time, it's not helpful.
No, it isn't. And, you know, that all comes down to that understanding and that trust, because if that individual thinks that's what's being said or thought, then they're going to feel uneasy. They're not going to have that trust. Their anxiety levels are going to go even higher. It's just a vicious circle, really. Yeah,
it is. I'm always one for language. And I think that's a really great phrase that you've suggested there, that my, you know, child is unable to come to school rather than refusing. And then we can kind of work through some of those difficulties. Yeah. One other question I had that was key, I had it right at the beginning, but I've saved it. You mentioned about PDA with your daughter. Tell us what PDA is and how that might link with autism and anxiety, if that's all right.
Yeah, so PDA is pathological demand avoidance, and it is a profile within the autism spectrum. So it is where an individual is unable to cope with those ordinary demands of life, and obviously many people, you know, wake up and think, oh yeah, I don't fancy that today, and we avoid demands, you know, that's what. However, this is to a pathological extent. So and if I think of my daughter, even things that she would like to do, such as drama, whatever activities that she likes, it's still a battle, a difficulty to get her out of the door. So that anxiety about what's going to happen, you know, what am I going to do? What am I going to be asked? What is it going to lead to? Can really stop her being able to put her shoes on and head out the door without that different language. So with PDA, it's really important that we sort of reduce demands, and we also encourage the use of different language. So declarative language is really key, something that we can use, which is like a commentary. So I may say or do, I may pop her shoes by the side of her. I may not actually say anything to her. I may say, oh, you know, soon we're gonna have to go out with your sister, and then we can drop you to drama. And but it's more of a statement. It's not a you need to put your shoes on because we have to go. So it's all about lowering general demands, giving them choices, ensuring that you use that different language with them. The I wonder if someone could help me do this. Many, many different ways to support these individuals, but it's quite a tricky profile, and tends to be one where our standard autism practice we tend to throw out the window, because it is such a tricky profile.
Really interesting. Thank you for showing that. That was in my head. I was like, oh, I must ask about PDA. I've done it. I mean, I was like at the start, I was like, I'm going to finish on time. I'm going to do this all perfectly today. And I'm there. I'm in the zone. So do you mind just wrapping it up? Just three top tips for parents, carers, professionals listening.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing that sort of us as a team, we talk about on our training, and we say always look for the bear. And by that, we mean, you know, if you've got a person stood in front of another, they can see this bear. The person at the back can't, but they can just see this behavior. But actually what that person at the back needs to do is to be inquisitive. Why is that happening? Why are they going, and you know, what is going on? So actually looking behind, looking under the surface, think about the iceberg as well. Also, autism. Sort of, and that comes from Dr. Luke Bearden, that autism plus environment equals outcome. So looking at the environment around somebody, looking at their sensory profile, looking at how they can trust individuals, that they have a sense of self, and so on, and also to support and to be their true autistic self. And I think that third one is really key.
Yeah, being our true selves, whether that be on the spectrum or you know, wherever we sit. I think that's such important advice and a great tip. So thank you so much, Kelly. We covered lots of ground, short period of time, but there's so many great tips in there, and I definitely want to get you back in to specifically talk about girls and autism. That's already in my head. So thanks for today. Really great catching up.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you very much for having me.
You've been listening to the My Family Coach podcast. Thank you for joining us as we lift the lid on the challenging world of child behaviour. Remember to subscribe to listen to all our episodes, and there's heaps more helpful support for all your parenting needs on the My Family Coach website. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.